Have you ever heard a strange noise in the middle of the night?
Hello?
Ever seen something you couldn't quite explain?
What's that?
Ever been visited by a loved one in a dream?
What are you?
Psychic mediums Katie Manning and Michelle Lyons-Polito talk about it all. Welcome to the Psychic on the Scene podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back for another amazing episode of Psychic on the Scene. And with you always is myself, Katie Manning Hilton, psychic medium. And with me is my dear friend, psychic medium, Michelle Lyons-Polito.
Hey, everyone.
And my other dear friend and producer, Dee Scott.
Good morning.
For this episode, especially we're doing it Zoom, we will be back out on the road as soon as Michelle is up and around and can, and weather permitting. Yes. Because she's the bionic woman and just had another surgery. So, yeah. So getting herself all set.
Yes.
And we don't mind because it's too freaking hot to be crawling around in haunted houses right now.
Can you imagine some of the places
we've been? No, that's what we did last year. It was hot as balls. And we were crawling around. Like, so much for the ghosts. I'm going to have a heat exposure thing. You're going to have to take me to the hospital. So tonight's episode, I had asked you guys, I really wanted to make mention. My mom had saved the paper for me the other day, and it was sadly the anniversary of the disappearance of Craig Freer.
Right.
20-year anniversary. He went missing on June 27th in Scotia Glenville. After leaving a friend's apartment and walking through a wooded area and then never seen again. So I my heart goes out to the friends and family closest to Craig. And his mother is an amazing lady who I have met. And I just think about them, and especially when I'm going through Scotia quite often. I think about them and I you know, send them good energy, but I just want to make our listeners aware that 20 years has lapsed since that. And, they have done other searches, mm-hmm. and they do believe that there are people, that know what happened, mm-hmm. but I urge people, if they remember anything, even the smallest detail from that time, if they lived in that area, or had seen anything maybe that was suspicious, that they could glean some new information for law enforcement. They can reach out online, I believe through New York State, as well as through the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And Craig was, as I said, 17 at the time, and just such a bright, handsome young guy. So.
With an amazing future. And I really feel very strongly that there are people out there still that know.
Yep, me too.
And I have a feeling that it's someone in particular is starting to weigh on their conscience.
Yep.
Whether they're sick or something, but I do feel that information will be coming forward within the next handful of years.
His family has done a tremendous job, as so many, as we know, through the Capital Region, Hope for the Missing, for Suzanne Lyle, started that movement, and a lot of families now in Capital Region are connected to that program. Too many families, I know. So I just wanted to start off just letting the our listeners and the Freer family know that we're thinking of them, and anytime we can do anything like that, I want to make sure that I shed some positive light on that. To
keep his name out there and
keep the name right. Keep it present for people. And again, if anybody knows anything, to make sure that they reach out to law enforcement. So I dove into our lists from our listeners, and we run the contest periodically, mm-hmm. and we had two cases that people wanted. Many things that they wrote in, but two things they wanted us to talk about. And one was the Idaho student murderer, Brian Koberger, I think I'm saying that right, Koberger, as well as the Gilgo Beach serial killer.
Yeah.
So, as far as the, from what I understand, the case with the Idaho students mm-hmm. is absolutely, I mean, devastating for the family. My hearts go out for those parents, those families of those students, but such bizarre. And, you know, it begs to, I mean, you always see the documentaries where they talk about people and they'll say, well, you know, he was just such a quiet, well-meaning, you know, mannered guy. He would never think anything. That is not the case when you're hearing people talk about the person that is accused of murdering these students. He was a really strange person and had a real dark energy connected to him. In fact, it sounds as if the family was trying, his father was trying to help him kind of flee and cover it up. But jeez. You know, they're still trying to connect the information. One of the most bizarre things about the case with the four victims that had been killed, stabbed, and again, stabbing, like any of, if you follow any of this, it's such a personal way to
close and personal.
Hurt somebody. Yep. It's very, very close and personal. And the fact that he did that four times and brutally, it's absolutely ghastly.
And left two people and a dog alive.
So that's another strange thing. One of the girls has said she came out and saw him.
Mm.
And almost like there was an exchange. Like he looked at her and she went back in her room. I don't know if she at that point realized what this person was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But went in a room and closed and he did not go after her.
It's like, why? Like there's never right. been an understanding of why he targeted the people he targeted.
I just recently saw something and it's really kind of it's from a person that is a writer who just wrote a book about it. And it says, When the Night Comes Falling is the name of the book. And they believe through this investigative journalist, as his career previous, I think he wrote for the Vanity Fair and I think it said Times Union, but what was interesting about it was he believes that he knew the one student, the one girl, and he had passed tracks, the Brian, had passed tracks with her, and the girl's name was Madison. And she worked in a restaurant.
Oh.
And that he was, in by nature, a bit obsessive.
Ah.
So that he would, maybe even if she didn't know him, he knew her. Mm. And you can see on one of the video footage things, the girls are eating, like standing at a truck, a food truck, after one of the bars.
Mm-hmm.
And they're talking and they're laughing. He's in the background, like looming.
Ugh.
Like walks over to him, walks around, right. and then like walks away.
And that's so terrifying. How many times have you been out with your friends and some
right.
dude walks by and you don't know that, like, you're the focus of his obsession? And that I think that's one of the most unsettling things for me. She probably had no idea.
Right. Well, and why would you? You know, we don't teach our daughters, and we don't go out into the world, even young men, thinking to ourselves, everywhere you go, be paranoid. Now, do I think in 2024 we have to teach our kids to be more like that? Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Unfortunately,
you know, I know Dee's family, his daughter dances, and he has said that they're the dance dads and they watch out all the time.
Yeah.
Correct, Dee?
Yeah. We're always, no matter where we are, we're always keeping an eye on who belongs, who doesn't belong, stuff like
yep.
that.
Cause you just don't. That,
yep. It's yeah. In this day and age that, so that case, I believe, goes to trial. The murders happened November 13th mm-hmm. of 2022.
Yeah.
And he was arrested December 30th of that same year. And then June 2nd of 2025 is when it actually goes to trial.
Such a long
time. I know it is. Absolutely. So long for the families. And maybe, though, it'll give them an opportunity to even collect more information about him and about exactly what the motives were. But at any rate, four young people tragically lost their lives because of something that, you know, could have been probably prevented. It's interesting, you know, as a psychic, if I'm watching the news, and I do not watch the news very often, as Michelle, and Michelle doesn't either. Most of the people we know that are in this field do not watch the news. Now, that's part of Dee's work, correct, Dee, that you have to...
A little bit.
As little
depends
as possible.
On, I mean, for what I do on jams, I don't pay much attention to it because I don't get into it too often on the air. But I try to be in the know with what's going on, considering I'm on a multitude of podcasts. So
right, you know,
especially my own, where if I have an opinion about something, like two babbling idiots debating, I try to at least have some sort of knowledge of things that are going on.
Right. Yeah.
Then I'm like, this shit's depressing. Fuck it.
Well, and the other part is they keep just they just keep repeating and repeating and repeating the same thing. It's no different in the Northeast. Not that it, by any means, you know, something like this is comparable, but it, as small on the news as we're going to get a snowstorm, they repeat incessantly to create fear.
Oh, it's all fear mongering. Everything is to get people stirred up and afraid.
Right. So, you know, I think we've kind of, you talk about a weird desensitization, desensitizing. We don't know what to be afraid of.
Exactly.
Because they keep telling us, you know, how much to be afraid of. But so because there's so much like chaos or you know, with that in my own head, that it's very hard to watch that. But anytime I do, you know, like I'll give you an example. I was riveted, like the rest of the country, rest of the world, when Johnny Depp was on trial.
Oh, my God, yes. I actually paid attention to that.
I had to. And every part of it that was riveting was you could read the emotions and the lies.
Oh, my God.
So when she was talking, you could read that she was scrambling mentally to do that. Well, it's the same thing when I see... you know, like a mugshot, or I see these guys being brought into court, I think to myself, my God, the crazy just reeks off of them. Like, how do they not know that this is a person that is not dangerous? I would also think that, you know, kind of going back, you know, in a student situation, you try not to be like overly paranoid. And maybe not insensitive to somebody that's a little bit of an oddball, but at the same time, boy, people have really got to listen to their warnings or their gut warnings. And I believe that there's other people that have said when they were in his presence, his, or when he was even in public, that he was, his behavior was strange. I know, but who would have ever thought that it would go to something like that ever? So, it'll be interesting to see how that unfolds. And I hope for the families that they get some sort of insider justice. You know, my belief with anything like this, like what else did he do before?
That is the question. You don't just wake up one day and start that. He's studying, like getting an advanced degree in like criminal justice.
Right. For it was like forensics.
Yes.
Or something like criminal justice. But yes. So he had almost like he was creating almost like a playbook. But I'm saying, are there other unsolved cases that are connected to, you know, this madman.
I don't think you would just start out with this particular murder, series of murders. I think he started small and built up to, I mean, small. He started with other smaller events and moving up to this.
There's an interesting show on series that is called Evil Lives Here. And I believe I watch it through Amazon. Mm-hmm. And what's fascinating about that show, that series, is when they're featuring somebody like this, they are talking to the family. They're talking to the brothers and sisters or the wives of these people that have survived it and giving insight like, well, you know, when he was a kid, he did X, Y, Z. And when we were married, he did X, Y, Z. So there are definite signs, but those people maybe have moved on. And then they're never surprised when they hear about that person and what they've done most of the time. And that, they've seen that where that switch is turned off and that other person kind of inhabits their body.
And you wonder, I mean, because how many people do you know that something's just off about them?
Right.
But, I mean, do you say, oh my God, they're a possible serial killer? I mean, or they're going to murder? It's even as a psychic, you know, once our personal emotions get involved, you can't see anything. You know,
well, I'll tell you something that's kind of interesting. And I might have even said this to you before. I have been with retired law enforcement, police officers, that as they were talking to me about different things, you did not get a warm and fuzzy. And I thought I would think to myself, you would make a brilliant serial killer. Not something I would say, but they would have enough knowledge and their energy reads on the other spectrum. Years ago, you and I were having lunch with Barb Nesnick, and she was talking about somebody we knew, and it had to do with their zodiac sign. And I'm probably paraphrasing this. I'm sorry, Barb. But what she basically said was, well, you know what that means? That means that person is like the two sides of the coin. Mm-hmm. They could either be a brilliant, you know, criminal, or they could be a brilliant person in law enforcement. It just depends on what side of the coin they go to.
I can't remember which person we were talking about, but I remember that moment.
It's probably somebody I was dating. So, hey, Sarah.
Live and learn.
Probably somebody like that. But it was something to do within their zodiac. And since she said that, I have actually tuned into that and certain people, like you think, boy, they are so close either way. That good and bad is in constant conflict.
Right. So, and I've seen that in people myself. It's like, you know, which...
I don't think it was John Wayne Gacy, but it's one of them that... I'd have to look it up. But he was enamored with law enforcement. He not only hung around law enforcement, he would talk to law enforcement, and he was a serial killer.
Didn't he impersonate as well?
He may have, yes. And why can't I think of his name? It wasn't John Wayne Gacy.
I know who you mean, though.
So it's the one that was he would interview. He was one of the first ones that was ever they used him in Mind Hunters, and he was one of the first ones ever interviewed.
And it wasn't the co-ed killer. Scared the shit out of me. I know I can picture him in my head, but I can't.
Yeah, big guy too, big man. Yeah, and I do. I believe he had a badge, and he was using a badge. But so there's definitely an affinity for that, and or a connection to that as well. Is that good and that the bad is very, very close, or they justify it. So, say again.
Ted Bundy.
Ted Bundy definitely did too. Ted Bundy also liked to. He felt he was, with the ego, he was equivalent, if not smarter, to most people in law enforcement. So he liked to almost make it like a game with them. He enjoyed it. He enjoyed it with law enforcement. This guy is the guy, he's one of the first ones, and he buried them in his backyard.
Yep.
And so they were like facing the house.
Oh God. Let me look up.
But he was when he would speak, you know, he actually enjoyed talking with law enforcement, and he felt like he was like a brethren to them.
Right, bizarre, but smarter, like, because they didn't know it was him.
Right. So that with this, it'll be, you know.
There was a bunch. Because I just looked up like serial killer impersonating law enforcement, and the list is extensive.
Yeah.
Gerard John Schaefer.
David Berkowitz.
No.
Let's see.
William Pierce.
Kenneth Alessio Bianchi.
And if I saw a picture, it looks very 1960s, 1970s, and he's got like a handlebar mustache.
Like this guy, right? I don't know if you can see.
I don't know. Our listeners can't. Kinda.
The guy on the right doesn't really look like a serial killer to me.
Kemper. His name is Kemper.
But that, regardless, I'll have to, I'll do a deep dive and I'll make sure I send it back. But it just is, I've actually witnessed it. When you're looking at somebody psychically, and they're talking to you, and they haven't told you what their career is, and you're thinking enforcement, or they could be a sociopath, or are they both? So, and of course, most law enforcement I love.
Right, it's important.
So I don't want anybody to think badly. In fact, I support them. But
I'm married to law enforcement.
Yeah, I know, exactly. So. We don't want anybody thinking that we're bashing. So just again, my condolences to these families, and that their private lives have become so public.
Yeah.
Just because of the madman, truly.
Yeah. Someone's, you know? The part that I always get hung up on is I don't understand. I can't even begin to understand how anyone can want to hurt someone else, you know, kill them, take away their life, own them. And it's like, and I know it's like, oh, because they're sociopaths or psychopaths, but I guess my brain can never quite, I can't wrap my head around.
You know why? You know, part of that, or I'm putting in here, yeah. Part of the reason is that there is, they have such logic. They function in other ways.
Oh.
So I guess when I think of that darkness, mm-hmm. I think of somebody that almost can't function in other ways.
Okay. So they can't even comprehend other people as people that are deserving of a life.
That they have jobs, that they have times where they're normal.
Mm.
They have times where they're raising families. Foster Strangler had a family.
It's unbelievable.
Had a family, and, you know, and then was going out and committing these horrific crimes. So that's the psychic part of me can't understand how somebody can separate their mind. And again, I'm not a neurologist or anybody that, you know, works in psychiatry. That there's so much that is chains, you know, like they can just flip that switch.
That's it. It's the flipping of a switch and just becoming someone else.
Yep.
And sometimes I wonder, is it like a multiple personality disorder? I mean, is it they become that? Is it a plan thing, or just they just wake up one day and they are that serial killer?
Is it a slow progression? There's probably some that are like a slow progression, and it, as time goes on, then it changes, you know.
Yeah, you hear about that. We lost Katie.
Bye-bye.
She'll come back. I saw her waving her finger in front of the camera, and then poof.
Yep. Well, Katie, yeah, so she probably got a message on there and accidentally went away. And yeah, she's luckily. Back.
I'm back. I'm sorry. My timer was going off, hit one thing and the other thing went off. Sorry, guys. But yeah, that so kind of brings me to the next thing we were going to talk about, which was the Gilgo Beach serial killer.
Oh my God.
So back when Gabby Petito went missing, one of the things, and I brought it up countless times on our podcast, that blew me away was when they were looking for her.
Her remains.
And they had done the search that they found 9 other bodies.
Yes.
Randomly. Weren't looking for them. Found them. While looking for her. That did not make headline news. And it kind of looked like a side story.
Yeah. Oh, there are a bunch of other dead people there too. It's like, are you, that blew my mind.
So one other person would be kind of wow.
Yeah.
Two. Wow. 9. So when, again, we're talking about news and media, why that stuff isn't constantly talked about, covered, that's not flashing on the screen, it blows me away.
That's nauseating. So, and have you ever watched Yellowstone?
Yeah.
Okay, there's an episode of that. And what I love about watching that show is it's very pro the Native American view. It's not,
yes.
A lot of people think it's, they're looking for the body of a young girl who was snatched. And they have an idea because of where her car broke down, where they could find her or her remains. So the whole tribe and a bunch of other volunteers from the town, everyone was given a whistle. And then they just kind of formed a human chain and they started walking through these scrublands, desert scrublands. And the one guy, the chief, ends up looking over a gully and unfortunately sees the young woman. He blows his whistle. And this is just so chilling. About 2 seconds later, you hear another whistle. And then another whistle.
That's right. That's right.
I got chills just thinking about it.
Yep.
And they're saying, and that these were all Native American girls, and they weren't being, they're just another missing Native American girl, that they were being preyed on, and this is the dumping area. And so that's what that reminds me of with the Gilgo Beach. Because, they're just prostitutes.
Yep, that's right.
To me, right.
They were sex workers. There is a belief with this, and there was 11, and I definitely think he's got more. Rex Huerman. How do you say the name, Michelle? You said it earlier.
Oh, Harriman? I did say it.
Harriman?
Harriman.
Rex Harriman.
Yes.
There was the show called The Killing Season. And I was telling you guys I was watching it way before he was caught.
Yeah.
And one of the people said on that, being interviewed, they said, it's going to wind up being a guy that works in the city. Mm-hmm. Has another whole life and does this. And then the belief was that there's more people involved. And when you hear that chaotic call of the girl that had gone missing, it really, the family pushed to have that investigated. And she said, you're trying to kill me. You're trying to kill me. And then, in looking for her, then they find these other bodies.
Yeah.
So, that was a spot where he could relive that every time he passed that.
Yes.
And it's very, very dense area, which on cases that I've worked before, I was working with another psychic, and it was so dense we could barely get through. And even law enforcement was struggling. And she turned to me and she said, well, I guess I know where to put a body if I ever needed to, because you could not get through.
Mm-hmm.
And she was kidding around, but it really was. You think of them going out there and being able to find them, and wouldn't anybody be able to tell? No, they're heavily traveled areas, and they're parts that people can't walk into.
Oh, because the heavy brush. I mean, mm-hmm. I hate to say this, but after listening to various podcasts and watching like Mindhunter, that terrified me to my bone, so I was kind of glad that they didn't have another season. But whenever we're on the highway, my husband's driving, and you go around those on or off ramps, and it's a circle in the middle, there's a bunch of trees and grass, and you can't see, and I'm like, oh my god, what if there's a body in there?
All the time. Yes. I think that very same thing too, because it's that has become part of that in my head, like It's an easy dumping spot. Yeah. Easy dumping spot for somebody that was trying to. So with this, part of it makes you think, if anybody has followed the story, and they've gone through the house and disassembled it, just recently, there is some question that perhaps the daughter witnessed something, because she has artwork that is extremely, she's like, she might even be an art major, extremely graphic.
Wait, whose daughter?
His daughter, Rex Hermans.
Hermans. Okay.
And so when they went to his home, and the mother, his wife, and the two children all said, you know, no, you know, it couldn't be. They took all these different things out of the house. But there's also, at the same time, a man that was at, one of the law enforcement that was kind of on the case, got in trouble for soliciting prostitutes.
What?
Yeah. So he got in trouble, and that was like, so did that muddy that? Was that a part of it? That they maybe they had information prior?
Oh, that's a good question. Jeez.
And that's another one that's like it even now unfolding the information of when that goes to trial.
Oh my God. When does this one go to trial?
You know what? I didn't see that, but I think it's probably sooner.
Yeah, I'm just
maybe not though. It might not be because of maybe the amount of information and stuff that they have to go through with the remains of 11 people.
It says January 16th, 2024, Hewerman indicted for the murder of Maureen Brainerd Barnes, then indicted. Right. On the June 6th. So he's incarcerated. Yeah, it's just like one at a time. They seem to be bringing these murder charges up.
Oh, again. Okay. Gotcha. That's why then. But then there's a belief that an adjoining area, which was, I think it's called Manorville, that they are looking in that area too. There's another property there. There's another property down south that he would frequent. I think he owned it with his brother.
It's amazing to think that Suffolk County has so many like empty spaces, isn't it?
Yes, I know.
If it were Nassau County, this wouldn't be the case.
Right.
But,
so Michelle, you were talking about before your experience back. Tell our listeners about that.
Back, it was 1989 through 1991. I was living in Rochester, New York. And it's my first time like living away from the Albany area. And I was working as an archaeologist for the Rochester Museum and Science Center. And we were doing, it was called contract archaeology. We were doing survey. If someone was going to have any kind of new build, we had to go in and make sure there was going to be no historical or prehistoric disruption. So that summer of 1989, so little girl away from home, living in big city, I'm watching the news at night. In the bottom left corner, there was a murder count for the city of Rochester. So it was just terrifying. But so in this job, we're doing survey. Where are we going? We're going into dense wooded areas. And if it's a plowed field, we would walk shoulder to shoulder, just do a walkover. If it was anything that was not a plowed field, we would walk every 50 yards and dig a test pit. Well, it started coming out in the news that that's the areas where we were looking for people to build was where this serial killer, whose name was Arthur Shawcross, was dumping the bodies of the sex workers that he was killing.
Did he have any affiliation with you guys that he would have known where to go?
No. It's just that with Rochester being a big metropolis, there weren't even that many open spaces left, so to speak, but it just seemed to be. So we went out with fear every morning that we were going to come across a poor woman's dead remains. And I was having nightmares about it. And the worst thing is the guy, Arthur Shawcross, killed at least one little boy and one little girl before this. He was sent to jail and he was let out early on good behavior because he protected a prison guard during a riot. So they let him out. He kills 12 more people. So, and that's obviously, you know, very controversial. I mean, you don't let a child rapist and killer out ever again. But he died. Strangely enough, he was born in Kittery, Maine. He drove his girlfriend's car around to pick up the sex workers and then dump them. But he ended up dying here at Albany Medical Center in 2008.
Wow.
From, you know, they shipped him from prison because he was having health issues. I'm like, who cares? Maybe I shouldn't be like that. But, oh my God. So he was serving 250 years, a life sentence, 250 years for his crimes. And he ended up dying right at Albany Medical Center. So, as I mean, we never did find anyone, thank God. But I can tell you, I don't know how those sex workers could handle that. Can you hear me okay? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel for these people that had to go out there and work and live in terror of, am I going to be the next one?
See, now that's another case too, Michelle, that I've never heard of.
Really?
Yeah, that was that. When you said that just now, I'm like, that's not a name. And I mean, that when you think about it in relative terms, that's not that far away from here.
No, it's a 4 hour.
But I've never heard of that case.
Yeah. And you know, never really thought about any of that until, like I said, you're watching the little ticker go up in the left-hand corner of the television every night. Oh, how many murders. It was a really hot summer like this one. And it was
same thing happened with Son of Sam. It was a heat wave.
That's right. And people they're sleeping with their windows shut and locked, and it was yep. So hot out.
Yep. I can remember that summer, and I was a teenager, and everywhere we went, we were terrified about the Son of Sam.
Yeah, we got ourselves so scared, didn't we?
Yep.
But
yep.
You know,
but it just with this, with the Gilgo murder, there has been, even when you see the Killing Season, mm-hmm. That series, there were other people that kind of, well, they did a real deep dive. They do an excellent job on that, by the way. And other people that were kind of in that same community. And like, she went to that one guy's house and she was knocking on the door, and he was a doctor in the community. And he basically like walked he was able to say, no, I might've seen her, but it was such vague information, and they just let him like walk away. There's a lot within these communities when something like this happens. I mean, obviously it's only as good as is probably the work or the information that they get. But boy, you think something like this, it's kind of scary because it ties in with like mass cover. Well, even, I mean, and didn't you guys talk about it a little bit about P. Diddy? Did you guys cover that at all on your?
No, I'm not talking about that guy.
Okay.
Who were we talking to?
Not at all.
No. A lot has to do with, at the moment, aside from the video that they have, it's there's a lot of speculation involved, depending on what it is that he was involved in. So I'm not even getting into it. And we just kind of cut ties with everything. We don't really play music from them. And I'm like, good. I'm not talking about that stuff.
Right. Right.
I mean, we're being like music centric. We try to stay on the, like, more of the happy time, happy stuff, as opposed to the crazy shit that Hollywood does.
You know, sometimes I wish I didn't know things about like favorite artists.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's like, you hear about Bing Crosby, White Christmas.
Right. And
I love that song. I mean, that to me means Christmas. But I guess he was just horrible to his wife, extremely abusive to his wife. And I probably shouldn't say it because now I don't want to ruin Christmas for everyone else. But for some reason, that was just like, devastating. Because you just want them to be whatever you need them to be. You know, it's not.
Well, even worse than that. I mean, kind of talking about like that, was he did the Minute Maid commercials. And it was with his family in the commercials. And pour me another glass of Minute Maid.
I forgot and, about that.
And that's when it came out about, you want to talk about it. I think it was one of the children that came forward and said he was horrible father. He, you know, he was horribly abusive. So when you watch that, it's like, oh God. So I agree, Michelle, that, but I, my point with that is it seems to be in certain communities or certain genres or thing that the cover up, and especially because this is like a year of karma. I've talked about that before. It's 2024, year of karma, where things are coming out and you're seeing it all over, whether it's personal relationships or family relationships, that things that were secrets, things that were not so ever supposed to be talked about are all coming out, whether it's politics and actors. So it's kind of interesting that this has come around, but it just seems like just when you think it can't get worse, it's bigger.
I know. It's almost like you want to strap your seatbelt on and sit back and watch.
Right. Right. Well, I might, you know, not that I, how can I phrase this? I hope with these kinds of cases, when they are finally caught, that they are able to maybe not only make sense of the person's path of what they were doing, and that they can maybe discover other unsolved crimes or, yes, you know, other things that are tied in. I mean, as tragic as it is, it would be nice, and maybe that's just a Pollyanna kind of a thinking connected to it, that they could discern and get more information from that.
Well, the you're just hoping that something, some positive morsel can come out of such a horrific,
awful
situation, because I mean, it's got to be awful to have a family member murdered, but I mean, I can't imagine having one missing.
Right.
That's got to be the worst, because you just don't know. And if any peace can be brought to any family members through the exposure of the truth through any of these cases, it would be a good thing.
Years ago, and we've had him on our show, was the most profound thing, working on the Craig Furrier case, actually. Yeah. And I was working with Harry Bafardi, Sheriff Bafardi. And he had, the one thing he said to me was, it was before it was public knowledge. I said, he didn't have his wallet. He didn't have like a cell phone. I don't know. It was 2006. So right. I don't know if, or actually I lie, 2004. So I said he didn't have his vehicle. He didn't have his wallet. Like, I knew those things and I got that stuff psychically. And what he said to me was, nobody can get from point A to point B without some sort of resource.
Right.
And you think about resource, that it's going to wind up leaving a paper trail. So maybe it's a car. Maybe it's somebody walking. Maybe it's buying a drink. Maybe it's in, but he said, there's going to be some resource. And he said, if there is no resource, he said, then you've got to, you know, think to yourself, okay, then something else here has happened.
Yeah.
That person didn't just leave of their own volition.
Right. He didn't just evaporate.
Right. Right. So I always thought about that. Like, yeah, right. You'd there'd be some marking. There'd be something that you did with your behavior.
Right.
Or that there'd be some kind of a trail. Some
evidence of something that wasn't right. Something
if they did it on their own, if they were doing that under their own volition, right, or there'd be doing something that it would wind up being, you know, caught. But
right.
So yeah, I definitely hope that some positive morsel comes out of actually all of these, but just with the exposure of that they find out perhaps other people and other families that can get some peace connected to it.
Amen.
So, anything else, Michelle, from you? Any other cases or anything?
No, I mean, all the cases that I looked into that we've talked about in the past, I just, and went through them. And the frustrating part is there's really nothing new.
Yep.
And I find that so god awful frustrating.
Yep. And it's not, and you know, we should let our listeners know, because we have worked on police cases.
Yeah.
It's not as if they're not working on them.
Oh, good point.
They're always active. And I've been contacted in the past by families, actually more contacted by people that become, they're passionate about it and excited, but they feel as if nobody's doing anything. And in fact, they don't know what they're talking about, because law enforcement is always working these cases. These guys retire, men and women retire. They pass the cases on. Mm-hmm. I will get a phone call and say, your name is on the file. Can we speak to you? So on some of these cases that are going back, I've spoken to like 3 or 4 different detectives.
Investigators, yes.
Right, that have taken it over. So they are always active cases, and they bring them home with them. They are always thinking. I've spoken to retired police officers who still talk about the same cases that they were not able to solve or resolve for the family. And
first thing in the morning when they wake up and last thing when they go to bed at night, I've heard.
Yep. Yep. So, yep. So, and we know that, you know, we feel the same way, that there isn't a time or an anniversary that comes up we don't think about certain cases and feel literally like it's our own family. So, I don't ever want our listeners to think that, well, what are the police doing? The police are behind the scenes. They're not going to share everything publicly.
Well, that's what I was just thinking too, is I was like, I'm not sure what people are expecting from the cops.
Well, they want it to be like TV,
like NCIS or CSI.
Well, the only reason that's on TV is because there's a camera.
And right.
It's like, right. Well, that's why you're privy to all the information, because you're watching the show based around that. But it's not like cops advertise everything they're doing, because they don't want the bad guys to find out.
And that's exactly right. You don't exactly show right.
That's how that works.
Exactly right.
The secret, the bad guy goes, oh shit, I better leave.
Yeah, exactly.
Not everything is tied up in a nice hour or 40-minute long episode either.
Right. Right.
Right.
So
I actually said that to somebody, because somebody said, well, can't you get exact location? So I'm working on a case.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And I said, no, it's not like the Ghost Whisperer that I come out with my false eyelashes and my negligee on and I go, and it's over there. You know, that, and let's be honest, psychics aren't solving cases.
Right.
We are a tool for cases. Law enforcement is solving cases.
Oh God, that's the God honest truth. I wish it was like television and we could come out and say,
right,
they're right here. And I mean, if I could, you know, make a wish to, you know, pull out a magic wand, have my spidey senses improved in one way or the other. And you've heard me say this before, it would be in helping to find missing persons.
Yep. Well, and the truth of it is, even when we're getting messages from people in spirit, it's, they have to lower their vibration
and translate,
and we have to raise our vibration, and there's a like a translation. So we might see a creek, the woods, the railroad track, kind of get an idea, sometimes even with a layout of an apartment or a community. But is it, you know, like they show on television? No, it is not like that, where that the psychic is the one that's solving it. My ego is not that big.
Well, it's, mine either.
The misconception that I'm sure you two are very well aware of, since you are the two that are the psychic mediums, is that this is an exact science.
No, right.
And it's
1,000%.
You guys are, for lack of a better term, interpreters for spirits.
Yes, that's it exactly.
And look at you, D, knowing shit.
What's crazy though is an interpreter actually speaks the other fucking language, and you guys don't necessarily do.
Right. That's right. That is true.
You speak a variation of the language, and you're trying to figure out what that spirit is trying to convey to you. So We're just trying.
Oh, Dee, I'm really impressed.
Yeah, we're just trying to put wrinkles on brains today. That's.
I know you're. I know you're overtired. It does something for your brain.
It's weird. I don't know. Listen, I got home. I had a great radio show today. I was not expecting that at all. And I got in the studio and I was like, "Holy cow! I'm actually pretty witty today."
You're on overdrive. That's what it is.
Oh my god!
And it's just like, all right, well, I got a thought, so I'm gonna say it.
Oh my god!
That's the fun part.
Yeah. But yeah, so I want to say again, thank you to our listeners, for having, you know, these cases mean so much to them that they want us to cover them. Yes. They can keep sending those in because it is something I'm passionate about. And I know Michelle and Dee would support that too. So please let us know anytime. And as we get, if we do get updates on things with cases, absolutely we'll cover other ones. But we'll be watching for these two, especially on the news. Or, you know, checking online, I should say, when those come up. But
And for the listeners' knowledge too, it's not necessarily that we don't want to talk about things or that we aren't getting information about certain things, but certain people can't say certain things about certain stuff.
Oh my God. That's a really good point.
You know, there's a lot where one of us might be privy to some information through someone that we know or whatever, and it's not for public knowledge, and we're not going to violate that confidentiality.
So. Absolutely not. And we're not going to talk about things that might upset any family members either.
Right.
Katie, what were you going to
say? Yeah, my dog. I'm sorry. Sorry. He heard something and now he's got decided.
This is amazing.
Yeah. I apologize. Yeah, Franklin. Franklin's on the podcast now. He's decided that he's gonna chime in. But what I was gonna say is I've actually had times where before I could even talk about something, I've had to contact the detectives and say, "Can I talk about that?" And sometimes they're great. They'll go, "Oh yeah, you can talk about that on the radio. You can say that." And then other times I'll get a phone call and they'll say, "Absolutely not. That's not even gone to trial yet. You can't discuss that."
Yeah, that's happened to me a few times with prepping for a podcast. I'm like, God damn.
Yeah. It's good stuff. Like you're like, ooh, that's good. Well, juicy.
It's happened to us with guests as well, where it's turned into them not being able to come on because they can't.
Oh yeah. That's right. Yeah. You know, yeah.
One guest in particular, I was thinking about that. We had with Gary, who was the jailer for Gary Evans, was not allowed to come on.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah. So, yeah. So I just, again, they're always working on it. They're doing their job. And, you know, we appreciate that. So, well, guys, thank you for another amazing episode. And Michelle, do you have anything coming up that you want to share with the listeners?
No, you know, I took the summer off of any big events, but I am up doing readings and clearings again. And
okay.
So just started that yesterday and started out with an amazing clearing. They know who they are. Boy, that was a transformational experience. So
good. Good. And Dee, what do you got coming up?
I'm up and running again. So in the fall, well, I'll do some clearings.
This Saturday, Albany Firebirds have their playoff game. If they win, they're in the Arena Bowl. I'm DJing the game, inside the game, providing the music that's in there. Come September, I'm DJing a 90s and 2000s party at the Tin Barn, which is in Claremont, New York, which is the Hudson area-ish. I'm trying to think. I think I have a fundraiser coming up in September that, as it gets closer, we'll talk more about. It's for he was a colony first responder, volunteer for, I think it was Fuller Road, and he ended up committing suicide, and they have a foundation in his name. I was asked to DJ that today, so that's on the horizon.
Wonderful. Oh, wow.
I did it last year too, and now they asked me. So once I was contacted today, I just said, how about we just consider me your DJ for this event for as long as you do it, or as long as I'm DJing? And she said, perfect.
I love that.
So, but yeah, the Firebirds game, I'm extremely excited about, and that 90s and 2000s party in Claremont. I'm really excited because that's my first like public gig where it's like a party type thing. And
right.
It'll be, and that's right in my pocket because the 90s and 2000s is kind of where I specialize.
So. I was going to say that that's when you were a kid.
So. Yeah. And that's kind of what I play anyway. So
good.
Today's music.
Yeah.
Today's oh, I love music, that.
The only time I play today's music is on the radio, and I like it because I have to.
Ah, here, I hear you.
Right, right.
Katie, what do you have coming up? I know you've got some.
I have a show. There's still tickets actually available for Grapevine Farms this Thursday night. So if anybody wants to come in to one of my gallery readings, contact Grapevine Farms. Great venue, wonderful people. Also doing, I was on somebody else's podcast, by the way. I was on Have a Nice Day. Is that what it's called? Oh, God. Make It a Nice Day. And it's with Lorraine Toth. And we talked about soulmates and what to do to like, clear that stuff out in your life. How ironic. Oh, yeah.
You had that on Facebook.
Yep. And I'm going to be meeting with Brittany Furman, one of our favorites, this week for her podcast.
Oh, nice.
So everybody else is kind of diving into the podcast and arena, and I get to be guest on that. So I'm doing that this week. And then tickets, there's a whole list on my website of different shows and events coming up. I will be back at the Holiday Inn with the Cat Radio. Yep, for Wine and Spirits. Yep. And I will be also back at Vapor Casino. Tickets are going fast, and that is in August. But that's just a couple of them I have. I'm actually going to be at the Elks Lodge in the fall, too. So a lot of different opportunities to come out and see me, and I'll also be posting classes.
Perfect.
So great stuff. So. Again, to you guys, thank you so much. And thank you all to our listeners. Please continue to send in your suggestions, your ideas, subscriptions, and your likes and shares. We love all of that. So, again, we're grateful for you. And that's it.
Okay.
Have a great night. All right. Good night.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.